Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at photo storage options on the show today. Plus, our guest will share some technology gifts at the top of her list. And our guest, well, Beth D'Angelo. She's a senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. So are you looking to reduce the amount of pictures on your phone? Still need a gift for the tech lover in your life? Or maybe you're just having some problems with your computer in one way or another. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Beth D'Angelo, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Larry. Good to be back. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I've got a few pictures and photos of my own on my phone. I haven't reached the limit, but I know that I and a whole lot of other people are going to be taking more photos, especially this time of year. Maybe it's the family photos, or maybe it's just the beautiful winter scenery. What are some safe ways to store photos?
I got to tell you, Larry, every time I get a new phone and I see how much storage I have, I think I can't possibly use it all up. And then inevitably, within like a year, my phone is full. So
yeah.
I get this problem. It's pretty common, especially with people using their phones more for video now and higher quality, higher resolution photos, the cameras that are coming on. Some of the newer phones take very high resolution photographs and video, and those files take up a lot of storage space. So inevitably, you're going to run out of space at some point in time. So you have to kind of figure out what you want to do with those photos. You don't want to delete them, obviously. You don't want to lose the memories that you capture. So where are you going to put all of it? So a bunch of different places you could choose. You mentioned online storage. So there are various cloud options for backing up your photos. You could also have a hard drive locally on your computer where you connect your phone to your computer and synchronize your photos to it. A bunch of different options. For me personally, I use Google Photo. It is the simplest solution. You can get started with it for free if you're not looking to use a ton of storage. The free option works for a lot of folks. There's also a paid option where you get much more storage. That's very well priced, and it's really easy to synchronize with your photo gallery that's on your phone with just a simple app.
I'm going to admit to something. About four phones ago, I thought, okay, I'm going to store those photos, and I stored them someplace, and now I don't remember where I stored them.
You hit them so well, you'll never find them, right? Well, if you still have the phone, it's possible that you could power that phone back up and take a backup of what's on it and recapture those photos. that's one possibility. The other thing is if you use an Apple product, if you're using an iPhone, it may be that those were synchronizing to your iCloud account, because that's kind of the default that comes stock with iPhones. So that'd be the first place I would check to see if those are backed up in your iCloud account, because that account itself would travel from phone to phone with you, so you should still have access to it.
All right. Well, then I have iPhones. I've always had iPhones, so I'll go back and look. Phyllis in Madison has a question that relates to all of this, so let's just go there. Phyllis, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, this was so lucky that you announced this. This is the thing I've been wanting to know how to do for ages. I have a lot of photos on my phone. It's a Samsung 8, and I have a Mac desktop, and I did download this thing. It's got like a little green robot as the icon for it, but whenever I try to download, it says something like, this isn't working. So I don't know what to do.
What does it say? Anything more than this isn't working? Or
well, that's my paraphrase. I don't remember exactly what it says, but it basically tells me that this isn't working. This can't be done.
Oh, it can't be done. Okay.
Yeah, it's possible that your laptop is a Mac and your phone is a Samsung. So those are using two different operating systems. So usually when you have a Macintosh computer, an Apple iPhone is going to be the easiest phone to interface those two devices. But working between two different product vendors like that makes it a little bit more difficult, which is why I would definitely recommend a cloud-based solution like Google Photo rather than using something that you install on your laptop and then install on your phone and try to synchronize those. Being that they have two different operating systems, they may not play well together. But if you use something like Google Photo to back your photos off of your phone into a cloud storage space, then it doesn't really matter what type of device you're accessing those photos from. There won't be any kind of mismatch between those operating systems.
Phyllis, does that make sense?
Yes, but could I then download ones from the Google Photos and I'll have them on my hard drive?
You can actually do that, yeah. Uh-huh. If you put things in Google Photo and then you want to save them locally on your hard drive, you can download photos directly from your Google Photo interface.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Yeah,
you're
thanks.
Welcome. Goodbye.
How secure are these options like Google Photos?
So I am a pretty paranoid person when it comes to my digital footprint. And that's just because I know, I guess, more than the average person about what goes on behind the scenes. So I tend to be a lot more conservative with what I store anywhere that's connected to the internet. So if you have any sensitive information, photos that you don't necessarily want, you know, anything to happen to be, you know, released publicly or to end up in the wrong hands, I would recommend not using a cloud-based storage. I would use an encrypted hard drive that's directly connected to your computer, and then you can connect your phone to your computer and use some software to store those photos. So, you know, using cloud storage, essentially, you've got to be careful with anything you put out there. Breaches of larger storage providers aren't unheard of. Google's pretty safe. They're pretty secure. They're, in my opinion, one of the I think the leader out there when it comes to data security in the cloud. But as far as sensitive information, I would be really careful where you put it. I would keep it local if you can. And if you're going to keep it on a local hard drive, make sure it's a hardware encrypted hard drive.
Okay, so let's talk about a bit more about hard drives. How do you figure out, let's just go to storage, how many terabytes you might need?
Well, I think most machines now are coming standard with at least 1 or 2 terabytes built into the hard drive. If you think about that in terms of how many files would it take to fill that up? Your typical photograph is going to be, you know, if it's high resolution, photograph that you're taking with your iPhone, that may be, you know, I'd say 2 to 4 gigabytes of data. A terabyte is 1,024 gigabytes. So you've got about 500 2-gigabyte files to fill up 1 terabyte. You know, you do the math, you figure out how many you're going to be storing, how large they're going to be, and you can kind of calculate then how many terabytes of storage you're going to need.
Yeah. There's something called a NAS box, NAS box. I don't know anything about it. What are they?
So that's a network attached storage. So it's a little bit more complex way of setting up a large amount of storage for multiple devices to connect to. So those are, we use them a lot more in the enterprise side or the commercial side of information technology when, let's say, you have a small office with 10 employees and you have data that you don't want stored in the cloud. You want to store it locally, but you want to be able to share all of that data amongst all of the various devices within that office that need access to it. You would set up something called a network-attached storage that provides storage and sharing of that data between the folks that are permitted access to it through some sort of access control system.
Diane in Madison emailed us. Her iPhone converts pictures to the, what is it, .heic or hike format, is it, to save space. And this gets annoying when she wants to share a photo, since many photos and apps can't read that file format, that .heic format. She could block that conversion and keep photos in JPEG format, but those files are much larger. So what advice do you have for dealing with .heic?
Yeah, the .heic files, so they're compressing essentially the JPEG file down to a smaller data size so that it transfers faster and takes up less storage space. But then obviously if you want to use any like digital photo editing software, or you want to maybe put your photos out on a website, you need to convert those then back to JPEG to be a readable format. So it is kind of a pain to do it that way. Like you said, those JPEGs do take up a lot more space. You can go in and tweak the settings within the camera on your phone or whatever digital camera you're using to capture those photos, to really optimize the file size based on what your needs are for resolution, and the size of the photo. So you want to see what, If you take a picture with your iPhone and then you download it as a JPEG and you open it up in a photo editing software, see how large the physical size of that photo is if you were to actually print it out. And based on that, you can calculate what resolution you're going to need to shrink things down to. And shrinking that resolution is really going to give you a lot more storage.
Somebody
else, it's going to size those files significantly.
Yeah, somebody else wondered how do you actually just go about the whole process of transferring photos from your phone to an external storage device? Is it hard?
Yeah, it's not really difficult. It depends on the type of phone that you have. With an iPhone, you can connect it via your Lightning cable directly into your computer. It'll then ask you if you want to be able to access the iPhone as a drive. And if you want to access it as a drive, it will then install the necessary software to be able to communicate with your phone so that you can see the files on your phone. Once you're able to get access to those files, then you can choose what files you want to move and where you want to put them on your laptop or your computer that you're connected to. You can also use something like iTunes allows you to access your photo gallery, I believe. And there are other third-party applications out there that you can use that will give you like a more friendly user interface for seeing your phone when it's connected to your computer.
Beth D'Angelo, our guest today, technology specialist. She's a senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Questions for her. We've been talking photo storage primarily, but we'll take other IT questions as well. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert is our producer today. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your computer and your phone today, we've been talking a bit about photo storage with Beth D'Angelo of the Division of Information Technology at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Questions for her, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Somebody else was wondering, how good of an idea is it to use a printer to scan photos?
Oh, yeah. I have a multifunction printer, scanner, copier device that I use if, you know, I want to scan old photos so that I have digital copies of them. But there are also scanners that are meant specifically for that that will go a lot faster. And they'll also scan at a higher resolution than a lot of the just kind of flatbed standard multifunction scanners will do.
So, and you can what, go to, I mean, I, how expensive are those?
Not sure. Let me see. I haven't looked at prices on those recently, but, these photo scanners. Oh, it looks like in the $200 to $300 range.
Okay. All right.
So you can put like a stack of photos in a tray. and it'll go through and scan those photos and save them to whatever device you've got it connected to, so laptop or your PC.
All right. Karen in Nisita has a question. Let's go there. Karen, hi.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. And my question is that I have a new laptop, and I'm wondering what's the best way to dispose my old laptop and, you know, get rid of all my important information off of there.
You've already transferred it to your new computer, Karen?
Yes, I have.
You have. Okay.
So you're looking now to just get rid of the laptop in a way that, you know, won't leave your data exposed. I would
exactly
recommend taking the hard drive out of the laptop before you dispose of it. So if you flip the laptop over on the bottom side of it, there's a bunch of screws in the bottom. And around where those screws are, there are generally little icons that'll tell you what's underneath those. And the one you're looking for looks like a little cylinder, and that represents your hard drive. And if you remove the screws that are near that symbol, you should be able to slide the actual drive out of the case. I would remove it. You can then do what you want with the rest of the laptop if you want to donate it or dispose of it through any of the either through your city disposal method or some of the electronic stores will collect those for a fee. But I would take that hard drive and smash it. You can also use high-powered magnets to erase it, but really the only true way to ensure that that data can't be recovered is to destroy the disk. You can take a hammer to it, take out your frustrations if you didn't like that computer. but otherwise, you would need an electromagnet or a high-powered magnet to wipe it. There are programs out there that say they will delete everything on there, but there's still recoverable data when you use those. So really the only way is to break it.
All right. Karen, there you go. Good luck. David in Waukegan, Illinois, your turn.
Okay, thank you. I've got an older iPhone 6 with 1,000 pictures or more, and I usually go to Walgreens and plug it in the machine, and I'm able to make photographs. But for a few weeks now, it won't come on the screen. And the manager at the Walgreens, I've been to two different ones and used different machines. My pictures won't come off my phone. Do you know what's going on?
Yeah, I'm guessing that whatever Walgreens is using on their machine had some sort of update. Generally, when there's you're using iPhone 6, which is, you know, 8 generations back now, so iPhone 6 is out of support and doesn't receive any new software or security updates. And at a certain point in time, the machine that you're trying to connect to will be updated to the point where it's not compatible with the phone that you're trying to use with it. So likely it won't work in the future on those machines that Walgreens is using. But there may be some information out there on Walgreens' website about, you know, what they support, so what version of iPhone they will support on those machines, but I'm not certain what that is off the top of my head.
So would David, let's say, okay, he's got the 6, but at some point he's going to get a new one. If he hangs on to the 6, or if he puts those photos up in the phone, in the cloud, and then downloads them to his new iPhone, let's say, would when he gets it, would he then be able to do it?
Yeah, absolutely. You can take the photos that are on the current iPhone 6. You can put those in Google Photos, and then whatever device you choose next, you can, if you wanted to download them directly to that device, you can from Google Photo, or you could, you know, just take them one at a time if you want to take them and print them. Download it to your phone and bring it in and use the same process you've been using just with your new phone. I would, you know, potentially do a search on Walgreens' website about their photo printing and whether or not they have a list of compatible devices.
Or at least stores that have them, at least Walgreens stores that have them. Yeah. There you go, David. Thank you for calling. Paul in Poinette, on to you now. Hi, Paul.
Hello. So I've been on Facebook since its inception, recently my account was hacked or cloned. I can still get into it. I did report it, but because I have so many pictures in there from the time I was on Facebook, I'd like to download them all. Is there any way to batch download those?
Yeah, unfortunately, no, which is, you know, one of the things I kind of caution people on is using their social media for any kind of long-term storage. Number one, the photos that are uploaded to it are only screen resolution. So if you were to download them, while you can't do it in batch, even if you download them one at a time, they're very low resolution, low quality photos. So they would never be printable. But unfortunately, there is no way to really batch export your photos out of Facebook. It's not a great interface for accessing anything for longer term storage. I wish there was a better solution to that.
On the other hand, Facebook often is offering me photos, the photos that I've included on my Facebook page in a book form, and they will go back years. So they have the ability to do it. It's just that they would sell it to you, I think.
Yeah, the quality of those photos I'm suspect of, because when you upload them to Facebook, they're stored at screen resolution. So when they're printed, they're going to be pretty low quality.
Okay, so it's the quality is, although I did buy one of those books once and I was pleased with the quality of the.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
I was pleased with the quality that I got.
Maybe they do store them at a higher quality, and maybe that's just not what's accessible when you're searching through your site.
Or when you're not paying for it, yeah.
When you're not paying for it, correct.
They are. There you go, Paul. Thanks. Carmen in Potter, we'll go to you next. Hi, Carmen.
Hi. We do not have internet service in our home, but I do have a smartphone, so I obviously have internet service through my cell phone provider. But every now and then, we want to print an email. So is there a printer that my smartphone can communicate with just by itself?
Yeah, absolutely.
How do I do that? How do I go about doing that?
Yeah, you would basically need a Bluetooth-enabled printer. So a printer, because you don't have a home network for your printer to connect to, most of them now either, you know, the way you normally would connect a printer is either with a cable that would plug directly into your computer, or you would communicate to it over Wi-Fi. But since you don't have internet in your house, you don't have a Wi-Fi network, obviously. But there are printers that are Bluetooth capable, which means they can connect directly to your phone via a Bluetooth link, a wireless Bluetooth link. You just have to be, I believe, within, I think, 25 or 30 feet of the printer with your device, and then you'll be able to send print jobs directly to that printer.
All right. Carmen, there you go. Thank you for calling. Peter from Washburn called but couldn't stay with us. He's wondering about thumb drives. Are they safe and do they work?
An encrypted thumb drive, a hardware encrypted thumb drive, is a safe option, relatively speaking. I wouldn't use a standard thumb drive that wasn't hardware encrypted for anything sensitive. So no sensitive data on those. I mean, just for storing files or photos. I'm not sure what their longevity is as far as shelf life. They're pretty cheaply made. So I wouldn't store anything really important on them. But if you're just looking for some quick and very portable file storage, I would stick to the hardware encrypted thumb drives.
So hardware encrypted, what does that mean, or what do you look for?
It's going to say that on the packaging that it's encrypted. Anything that is going to have that built-in security where there's an encryption key built in that password protects that hard drive so that it can't be, the data on it can't be read without the right credentials or password. That's going to be advertised right on the packaging for what you purchase.
You can join in too, by the way. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Matthew emailed us with a comment. The guest just said that you just said that photographs from mobile phones were 2 to 4 gigabytes. That's 1,000 times larger than they really are. They're more like 5 millibytes. So you can get hundreds of thousands of them on a modern 1 to 2 terabyte hard drive, not just 500.
Apologies, I moved my decimal point. I meant megabyte. So a megabyte and a gigabyte. A 2 to 4 megabyte for a photo. So multiply what I said by 1,000.
Jan from Milwaukee is trying to figure out a way to attach pictures from Google Cloud to Gmail other than having to send a link to the photos. Can you just attach the pictures? It's hard for non-Gmail users to get to the pictures.
Yeah, you can actually just download the photo locally and then attach it. So if you have a photo stored out in Google Photo, you can download it to your phone or to your laptop and then compose a message like you normally would in your mail application and attach it like you would any normal photo.
Let's go to Jamie in Algoma. Jamie, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay, I have a tip for the lady who wants to print from her phone to her computer but doesn't have internet in her house. I'm in the same situation. And what I do is we have 2 smartphones. And on the phone that I am not printing from, I'll turn on its hotspot. So that satisfies the Wi-Fi for the printer and the other phone. And then I can send through Wi-Fi that picture that I want to print from my other phone to the printer. And it seems to work well.
Oh.
So if the lady has 2 phones that she can use, she might want to try that, using the hotspot on one to print from the other phone.
Oh. What do you think, Beth? That sounds like it works to me.
No, that's a very smart hack. That's absolutely, that will work. It really is just that if you have a Wi-Fi printer, your printer needs a network connect to, and what the caller is doing is essentially just creating a little mini network out of their 2 phones so that the Wi-Fi printer knows where to send the data.
Jamie, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. You can join in too, by the way, 800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly with your comment like Jamie's, or perhaps you've got a question about your phone or your computer. Love to hear from you. 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. A listener emailed a question, are there classes in the Madison area on the best way to scan, save, and store old hard copy photos?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I have not thought about that. I'm not sure if there are classes available that teach how to do something like that, but likely there are tutorials online if you wanted to. YouTube is really a great resource for figuring out how to do things. Anything I'm trying to figure out how to do, I pretty much just go to YouTube University initially and do a quick search on, you know, how to scan photos, how to print photos. And generally, I find, you know, a half dozen videos that somebody has taken the time to make that'll walk you through it step by step. So if you can't find a class in person or a local source, you know, really I turn to Google University pretty frequently and or YouTube University pretty frequently to figure these things out. But I think that would be a great thing to teach folks how to do is, you know, how to preserve their old photos. It came up when my grandmother was moving out of her house. She had drawers and drawers and drawers full of slides. She had taken all of her photos on old slide film. And this was about 20 years ago. We were trying to figure out a way to convert all of those slides into digital photos. And boy, it was a production. So,
speaking of that, Jerry in Prairie du Chien has a question that relates right to slides, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Yes, I do have, I've got hundreds of slides. And I'd like to be able to, is there a device out there that can scan them so I can put them to my computer tower so I can store them, you know, digitally?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's a whole bunch of products out there. Kodak makes one, Epson. Actually, there's a whole bunch from Kodak. They're called slide scanners. Essentially, it lets you feed slides through. It will bring it up as a digital photograph. They even have little screens on them so you can see the photograph. And it'll store it to a storage device that's either built in, or you can plug it in an external hard drive, or you can connect it to your computer. So it'll scan and store those just like a photo scanner would.
Do you have to do them one at a time?
No, they can do them in batch. So they've got these little cartridges that you can feed in with stacks of slides, and it'll go through and scan them and spit them out.
Oh.
And boy, do I wish that existed, well, within my price range 20 years ago when I was trying to do this. So it's come a long way.
And the cost has come down.
Significantly. These, you can get them for under $200.
Yeah, that's probably worth it, Jerry. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Jeff and Rhinelander was wondering, what are your thoughts on the very popular photo stick? They are heavily advertising from Sharper Image and other places.
Oh, the photo. So this is a selfie stick.
Photo stick. Yeah, I think it's, you see the TV advertisements for them.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't actually really looked into these at all. This is a new one for me. I'm not a big TV person, so I don't have a whole lot of information on the photo stick, but it's something I will certainly check out.
Yeah. Well, we'll check those out. Maybe when we break for news, we can take a quick look.
Let's search right now.
Gail in Madison, your turn. Hi, Gail.
Yeah. The Central Madison Library has a personal archiving lab with drop-in tutorials from 3 to 7 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays. You need to call for an appointment at 608-266-6350. You can do hard copy photographs. You can do slides. You can do VHS tapes. They've got lots of fun equipment down there, and it's great. You don't have to buy all this stuff.
Yeah. So the Madison, this is if you're in Madison, the Madison Library, and you can call for an appointment, 608-266-6350.
What a great resource. Our libraries just, they have everything.
Oh, they're wonderful people and wonderful service. Gail, thank you so much. Appreciate that very much. Let's see. We've got other callers coming online. The number to call, by the way, is 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Pat in Oregon, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have an old Macintosh computer laptop with lots of photos in my iPhoto program. I have a new Mac Air and an external hard drive, and I'm wondering, when I transfer the photos into the hard drive and then back into my new Mac Air, can I do it in chunks, or do I have to do them like one folder or whatever they're called at a time?
So you're looking to export all your photos from your old device and then to import them onto your new device?
Yeah.
Yes, correct.
I would use a backup tool for that. That's probably going to make it easier than trying to move everything one at a time or move all the folders at once. I would look into just downloading a simple like backup utility that will take all of your files and organize them into a backup that you can then pull over to the new machine, and it'll maintain the file structure and all of the permissions that are on there, so you don't have to recreate it. You can do it through a cloud service like Carbonite, or you can download a hard copy piece of software to do it, like Norton Utilities, Norton 360.
So what does she, how does she search for that then to get those?
I would do a Google search just for backup tool, like a file backup tool.
So file backup tool.
Yep.
Okay. Pat,
there, you know, usually I go through either CNET or, you know, Consumer Reports or one of those various sources to vet those products. So to take a look at how it's rated and how they've reviewed it to find the right one.
All right, Pat, thanks. Appreciate it. Mary in Barrington, Illinois, on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to reiterate about the positive results you can get through your library. They have wonderful resources. They have all these resources where you do not have to go out and buy individual pieces of technology. And on top of it, they have such skilled help that there is a generation, the traditional generation, that likes to speak one-on-one, and you certainly can get that at your library. So there are such positive things. There is YouTube, but YouTube isn't the answer for everything. And sometimes they do things that are maybe not the best way. Mm-hmm. So don't rule out your library. And check around, too, for different libraries and different tools.
Yeah, that's very good advice, Mary. I love the local libraries.
I'm a huge advocate of the library, and that especially because I have kids, so it's a space that we've utilized throughout their lives. Also, in addition to that, there are, in many communities popping up, there are maker spaces, which some are organizations that you pay a fee, some are more volunteer-based. But they give you access to a lot of technology tools and the folks who know how to use them. So if people are looking to get into things like 3D printing or they want to learn how to do digital photo editing and you don't have access to the tools or to the know-how, there are many organizations popping up, I know, around Wisconsin that have the tools and the technology where you can join either for a fee or on a volunteer basis and really learn how to use this stuff from people who know what they're doing.
Thanks again, Mary. Appreciate the comments and your call. You can join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller with Beth D'Angelo. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your phone and your computer software and hardware with our guest today, Beth D'Angelo, IT specialist. Great to have her with us. Join in at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call from Ed in Gurnee, Illinois. Hi, Ed. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you? Listen, thanks for the show. It's always great to hear you. Hear your voice and all about talk about technology. On the woman who had talked about the photos with her old iMac and getting into a new MacBook. I've got a huge amount of photos in Apple, around 34,000 photos, and it's totally unwieldy to try to store them locally. So what I have done is I put them into the cloud. Apple has a great cloud system. So if you upload all of your photos to the cloud, they will be on every device, every Apple device that you own will have those photos. And it's safe and secure, and it's a good way to do that. And if you do want to keep them on your computer, I don't know how many she has, but the new laptops don't have large drives to store them. So I would recommend an external drive attached to the MacBook to hold her photos only. So it's a different issue than Windows computers. It's really a different world. And all of your data will be on your photos will be held up and searching the photos. You can search photos by subject, location, or anything like that to find a photo. So just my advice to use the iCloud.
Ed, thanks for calling. Beth, what do you think?
Yeah, iCloud is it's basically similar to Google Photo. It's Apple's version of cloud storage for your photos. It comes built into your iPhone. You can turn it on to store your photos or not. I choose to use Google Photo just because I'm I like their search feature. It actually uses some pretty sophisticated AI so that you can use keyword searches and search through your catalog of photos, and it will find all the photos that match your search terms. So if I want to search for every photo I have in there of a bird, it'll show me every photo I have in there of a bird, which makes it really helpful for me to find things. But the iCloud is very similar to that. And if you are using all Apple products, it's much easier to use iCloud than really anything else because it's the interface is pretty seamless.
Yeah, absolutely. Ed, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Dave in Sheboygan, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Larry. Hi. I just have another solution for the backup from one Mac to another. You do not need to use iCloud, but remember, too, if you do use iCloud, you need to purchase more space. The free space they give you would not be enough. But built into iPhoto, there is a export entire library option, and you can then export that to an external hard drive. Once that process completes, you can then plug that external hard drive into your new Mac and tell iPhoto on that device to import the library. And it will keep all the directory structure, the metadata, all the information and anything you've done to move your pictures to organize them all at one time without needing to use iCloud. It's actually just the export library on one machine and then import the library onto the other machine.
Hmm.
And that's only if you're going from one Mac to another Mac, correct?
That is correct. The woman who called before about wanting to move pictures from her Mac to the others, that will do that, yes. But with iCloud, if you have more than like 500 pictures, you're going to need to purchase more space from Apple for a subscription price to get all of your photos.
Correct.
All right. Dave, thank you very much for that comment. Appreciate it. Ken from Ashland emailed us, and this relates to recycling computers. He says to check with DNR eCycle program, and you can Google DNR eCycle, and locate a registered collector in your area for responsible electronics disposal, and DNR has a list. Data erasing software that they use, the people that are on the DNR program list, the data erasing software will result in a hard drive that meets Department of Defense standards for data security. So
I'm sure they're actually using software. They may be using what's called a degausser, just a high-powered magnet that then wipes the hard drive.
I still have a degausser in my old office from when I had reel-to-reel recording tape.
Well, there you go. Now you can go into business clearing people's hard drives.
I was going to business with my my degausser. Oh, boy. Let's go to another email. Tony emailed us. He has multiple copies of photos he'd like to remove. He's using Mac iPhoto system, and for some reason, the photos are automatically creating duplicates, sometimes several copies of lower quality than the original. Is there a method to search and remove duplicates automatically?
There is, yes. If you go into the your photo app on your iPhone and you go into albums, there should be a duplicates album. I think it's right below utilities. And if you go in, it will merge all of your duplicates together.
All right. There you go. And Rick in Milwaukee, we'll go to you next. Hi, Rick.
Hi, I have an iPhone 6 and not that many photos, but I'm running out of storage space and I don't want to purchase more. And I'm just wondering about the idea of emailing a bunch of them to my computer desktop. Would that work? Would it be inefficiently slow or what?
It's possible, but likely your email program has a limit on the size of emails that you can send, or whatever email provider you're using is limiting the size. So you probably have to do them a chunk at a time. It may be also that your email provider has a limit on the amount of data that your email can take up. So you may end up filling up your email inbox with your photos inadvertently and then running out of storage space in your email. So probably not the best method for getting those off your phone. I would really recommend using a cloud storage like iPhoto or iCloud. Upload your photos to cloud storage, and that'll make it a lot easier to access from any other device that you're on.
All right. There you go, Rick. Thank you. Mary emailed us. She's been using Picasa. It's an old Google product they no longer support. And years ago when they announced the discontinuance, she downloaded the application so she can reinstall whenever she has issues with the software, which is hardly ever. Mary continually looks at photo management software available and can find nothing that has Picasa's function and simplicity for editing, storing, and finding photos. Are you familiar, Beth, with Picasa? What do you use and what do you recommend?
Yeah, Picasa is actually, Google bought it out and basically absorbed most of the functionality into Google Photo. So as far as the organization and tags and captions and search capability, Google Photo takes what Picasa did and amps it up about 150%. So I would say try using Google Photo. It's probably a lot more than you were used to. Picasa was a bit simpler. But I think most, if not all, of the features and functionality that were available at Picasa are now available in Google Photo.
And the only problem is that it's takes a little more learning to learn how to use it?
Correct.
That's probably the issue. That's why people like Mary and probably almost everybody else like simpler. Simpler can be thought of as better, but
yeah, it's hard when they overcomplicate things when you're used to things being in a certain place and you want it to be easy and you don't necessarily need all of the other bells and whistles. It's hard to navigate around that sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know if this happens to you. It's happened to me a time or two when somebody wants to borrow my phone, you know, even when I'm standing right there, they say, hey, can I borrow your phone for a minute? Are there security risks that occur when this, you know, if you do that, it could be somebody on the street, it might even be a young kid, but are there ways to protect your phone if you have to lend it to somebody else? Yeah, you know, is there some adjustment you have to make to your phone setting?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think anyone with young kids might be able to, you know, relate to this. Your kid wants your phone, but you don't necessarily want them to access everything on your phone. Maybe you just want them to be able to play a game or watch a video. There's what's called guided access that's available, I know, on the iPhone. If you go into the settings, under accessibility, there's something called guided access that you can turn on where you set a passcode. And basically, you tell the iPhone what you want enabled while you're in this mode. And if somebody tries to access something that's not specifically enabled, it will ask for that passcode. So it's a way to keep your kids from accidentally, sending random text messages or whatever they might be doing when they're playing games on there.
Yeah, I could see where, and just to hand it to somebody, could somebody do something to your phone? You're at Disney or something and somebody says, oh, can I borrow your phone for a minute? I've got to do this or that. Is there some way they could actually be stealing information while you were standing there?
If you were logged into any applications on your phone at the time, they could easily open one of those applications and change a password. So say, for instance, you had your email logged into. They could just open up your email application and go into the settings, and they would see your address, your email address, and they could change your password. And suddenly they have your email address and your password when they walk away from your phone. With your email address and your password, they could likely change every other online account that you have.
Ooh. I think you can't
somebody your phone to take a picture of you standing in front of, you know, the Statue of Liberty, and you never know what they're going to walk away with.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. A lot of times people say, here, I'll take a picture. You know, you're trying to do a selfie or something with the daughter.
Yep.
And they could actually, I had never thought of that.
You'd be surprised at how quickly people can move, too, especially if you're just leaving your applications logged into, which most people do.
My goodness. Well, I learned something on that note. I actually have learned quite a bit so far with our guest, Beth DeAngelo. She'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news and find out what else is in store for us. Then we'll be back with Beth. You can join in right now. Email to ideas at WPR.org or phone 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Talking technology on the show today, Larry Mueller here with my guest, Beth DeAngelo. She's senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, or DOIT, as we call it around here. She's worked in IT for more than 20 years, and I hope you'll join in. Are you having a problem with your smartphone or computer? What other tech questions might you have? Number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas at WPR.org, ideas at WPR.org. Let's take a call. Richard in Milwaukee, we'll go to you now. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, in our house we have iPhone and iPad, and at some point photo album or a slideshow type thing appeared on the iPad, and it went through the different photos and was accompanied by background music. And it's not something that we went in and programmed or that was marketed to us and we bought. It just appeared at some point, first on my wife's iPad and then on my iPhone. And the only thing that I can think of that would enable the thing to be assembled would be facial recognition. But then I'm wondering, how did they get access to the pictures to begin with?
Hmm.
Yeah, it sounds to me like iPhoto is doing what it's called its photo year in review slideshow. So if you're backing up your photos from your iPad or your iPhone or both to iCloud, it's going to automatically, it uses AI to recognize your face or the faces of people in your photos and group those together. And at the end of the year, it produces that little video with music to show you a year in review of your photos of you. So it's really just a marketing gimmick that the iPhoto puts together. Similar to, like, if you have a Spotify account, it puts together your music of the year. So the most common songs that you listen to, and in December, it'll send you here's your December playlist for the year. So similar to iPhoto.
Very interesting. Richard, can you copy that or save it, Beth, if you wanted to?
I don't use iPhoto, so I'm not sure if you can save it. Likely there is an option to download it in the iPhoto application. While it's playing, if there are options to do anything with it, usually there'll be that three little dots, the ellipsis icon that you can click for more options.
And that, so if it doesn't sound like Richard wants to save it, but if somebody did want to save it, it would be, you have the family over for some holiday thing. You could probably show it, I suppose. There you go, Richard. Thank you. Jeff in Door County, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, good morning, guys. My question is, if when I go onto a website like Costco or something like that, it automatically tells me where my closest store is, like this is your home store, and it's always the same place, and it's not where I live. And I'm wondering, how do I change that, and is that something I should be worried about?
I wouldn't be too worried about it. What it likely is there's some sort of cookie that's saved that's triggering it to think your location is somewhere where you're not. Mm-hmm. Generally, there is a store locator for stores like that. So you can go into their store locator and choose your home store, and then it'll overwrite that cookie and store it as your local location from then on. So every time you go to that website, then it'll know where you're at. But if you're automatically clearing your cookies, then it's not going to know where you are without like location services turned on or something like that. So it'll probably default to whatever that website's default store is, which wouldn't be your home location.
Hmm. And if you restart your phone or your computer, that clears the cookies, doesn't it?
I don't think it doesn't clear them unless you actually specifically go into your settings and clear those cookies.
Okay, there we go. Susan and Nina, we're on to you now. Susan, thank you for calling. Susan, we're not hearing you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was wondering about if I could just... I've been using Google Photos just online, and my question is if when I try to use the computers, I have thousands of computers on my photos on my computer, do I have to give permission for Google to grab all of them, or can I just specify which ones I want to include in Google Photos? I'm kind of referring back to the person who talked about how much she liked Picasa, and I'm having a lot of trouble dealing with the Google Photos, so thank you.
Yeah, there is an uploader tool for Google Photo that you can use that will allow you to choose either by folder or by file which photos you want to upload. I'm just going to get the name of that. I think it's the Google Photo Uploader. Let me just make sure I've got the right name. Yeah, actually, if you just download the Google Photo application, it comes with the uploader tool that'll allow you to choose by file or by folder to choose which photos you upload to the cloud and which ones you keep local.
All right. Susan, does that help?
Well, yes and no. It seems to me that I was having a hard time not wanting them to take all of my photos and finding the ones that it specifically wants to choose. I go back and forth between my iPhone and then my PC. So I will try again. I've just been afraid to do anything more than working online with Google Photos because I don't really want to deal with them downloading these thousands and thousands of pictures. So I will try again and maybe try to go a little bit more slowly, one step at a time, because it sounds like I can... be selective. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Susan, for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Open lines will get you on pretty quickly. I mentioned at the start of the show that here we've got the holiday season. People are out buying gifts. What tech gifts are at the top of your list this year?
Well, a couple of things I've been looking at. For one, there's a new generation of digital photo frames that have come out recently. Photo frames themselves, the electronic photo frames, have been around for a long time where you could take digital photos, put them on a little SD card, and plug that SD card into a little digital screen-looking picture frame, and it would cycle through those photos. Well, now they have a new generation of devices that can connect via Wi-Fi, so you can actually load photos into it without having to plug in an SD card. So if you wanted to change those photos, if you want to Say grandma, you know, wants to see new photos of the kids once a week. You can do a photo upload to her photo frame from your house and send her new pictures anytime you have those. So I know that's a big one that people are clamoring about this year. The other one is smart outlets, which have been around for a while as people are building into their smart homes, you know, different devices that they can control with an app from their, you know, from their phone on a Wi-Fi network. The trouble is a lot of these systems don't communicate with each other well, but there's a version of outlets now that you can basically plug any device into and use it to control the power to that device with an app from your phone. So those are two things that I've got my eyes on.
Couple of interesting things. Let's go to Jenny in Madison next, who has a question for us. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, thank you so much. Out of the blue, a few weeks ago, I would log on to try to get my email, actually from the university website, and I get now a screen that says your connection is not private, it's not secure, and like in the URL bar, it's the red print with the triangle and exclamation point, and it's on Chrome. And so I don't know why this change happened or if that's something I should be worried about.
Yeah, absolutely. I would be concerned about your browser acting in a manner that is, you know, unlike it used to, especially if you're going to your standard email site. If it's through the university, if you're going to our WISC mailer, email.wisc.edu, and it's telling you that that site is insecure, it sounds like there's some sort of issue with your browser. There may be a virus that made some changes to the settings on your browser that's causing it to not use a secure connection protocol, or there could be some malware. I would, if you have virus protection software on your computer, I would run a scan to make sure that there isn't anything that may have changed your browser settings. Another thing you can try is if you're using Chrome, you can open what's called an incognito browser window, which is basically eliminates all the cookies and tracking and anything but default configuration in your browser, and then try to go to your email website from there to see if it responds the same way. You can open one of those by just right-clicking on your browser icon and going to the open new incognito window, and it'll change to a black screen interface instead of the standard gray and white, so you can tell the difference between them.
There you go, Jenny. Thank you. John in Wanakee, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. My wife and I were having a kind of a random conversation the other day about something, and immediately after started seeing ads in Facebook about what we were just talking about. Now, we had not talked about this subject before. Is there a way to find out what's listening to me and putting these ads up?
Well, yeah. Unfortunately, the way to really know is by reading the end user license agreements of any of the software products that you're installing on your devices. And that's a really tedious way to try to find that out, because those are, you know, obviously written in attorney speak, and they're very long and dry and not easy to understand. One thing you could do is go into the settings on your microphone and take a look at what apps have permissions to your microphone on your device. So if you go into the settings of your phone and under, I think it's either speech and language or microphone, depending on which version you have or which phone you have, and it should list all of the applications that have access to the microphone as a device on your phone. If there's anything on there that you don't want listening to you, I would turn it off.
Yeah, that'd be the quick way to do it. John, thanks. Rob in La Crosse, on to you now.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the Google Photos problem.
Yeah.
There's a setting, if you look at the upper right-hand corner under your, like a picture profile, you can go into settings, and I believe she's having a problem with her, it automatically syncs whenever you take a picture on your phone or your computer, so it'll sync to Google Photos, everything, so she might want to turn that feature off.
Another good idea.
Yeah, I think that's the case by default when you have it on your phone, is that it'll automatically synchronize any photo that ends up in your photo album from your camera. So if you don't want that to happen and you want to synchronize photos specifically, you can turn that setting off. And then if you take a picture that you want to synchronize to your cloud drive, then you just choose to synchronize that when you're ready.
Randy in New Richmond, on to you now. Hi, Randy.
Good morning, or I should say good afternoon. Great show again. I'm an IT dinosaur. I worked on the first computers that were ever built. So I'm using an Android, and I've been saving. I like hard saving equipment, so I've been putting stuff on disks and SD cards and stuff. My photos, because if my phones burn down or I lose them, I lose all that stuff. So I've been hard backing it. How long can I expect the stuff to have integrity on an SD card or a hard drive or like a disk? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an SD card, I actually would, as long as it's stored somewhere safe, it's not going to get damaged or wet, and it's not like out in the sun where it's going to get overheated and warp. I would expect an SD card to actually last longer than a mechanical hard drive. Because there aren't moving parts inside of it. So people think that might be a little counterintuitive to think about one of those little SD cards being more reliable. But it's a different type of memory or different type of storage. It's flash memory rather than mechanical disk memory. And those disks actually can, over time, warp or get dead spots on the disk where you can start having data corruption. So they're less likely to stand the test of time than something like flash memory or an SD card would.
Randy, thank you for calling. Peter in Racine, on to you now.
Good afternoon. Appreciate the show very much. I'm trying to replace a laptop with Windows 7. Looking for another laptop, but I don't need all the bells and whistles. Is there something that you might suggest for somebody like me to look at?
And what do you want to use it for?
Boy, no gaming at all, just internet aspects and Microsoft Office.
Well, if you're looking specifically to be able to use Microsoft Office products, and if you want those as the actual installable versions on your computer, then you'll need to look at an actual, you know, a fully fledged laptop. But if you were willing to use the web version of Microsoft Office products, I would recommend looking into a Chromebook. Chromebooks are a much more simplified version of a laptop. They've got an Android operating system on them. They run basically on a Google platform where you have access to all of the Google applications. But if you do have a Microsoft 365 account, you can use those same Microsoft Office applications in a browser window rather than having to install them on your machine. And they function mostly the same. There may be a few fewer bells and whistles, but it sounds like you're not looking for really the extended version of anything. And a Chromebook could be, it's very simple to use. They're much less expensive than a standard laptop would be, and it sounds like it would probably suit all your needs.
Yeah, we're talking 100, 200 bucks, aren't we?
Yeah, they're very inexpensive.
Yeah, there you go, Peter. Thanks for calling. Brad in Door County, on to you now. Hi, Brad.
Hello. See, I use Roku through my internet, which is Frontier. And as I go on to, I also subscribe to YouTube to get channels, including local news. But consistently, YouTube changes my location to southern Wisconsin versus Door County. And it doesn't. It's a big challenge to try to find support to get that changed. Do you know a secret way to do that?
Well, I don't know if I know a secret way to do that. I'm just checking really quick to see if there are any secret out there about changing your location settings in YouTube. So it changes. Does it change the country you're in, or does it just change your local?
No, just local address. Just
your local.
I get the Madison markets.
Right. Yeah, that would be a pain if you're trying to get your local news stations. Just trying to see. It looks like there's some info on, okay, location tag. So changing your content location. I'm not going to go through this whole guide with you, but if you want to do a Google search for YouTube content location, I see a video here that goes through the process of changing your location tagging. It should help you get through that.
Brad, good luck with that. Thank you so much. Somebody else is wondering about Messenger. They've gotten some notices from friends that say, oh, somebody must have hacked your Messenger because I'm getting information supposedly from you, but I know it's not. How do you fix that through Messenger? How do you get whoever got into your Messenger to get off?
Well, it's possible that it wasn't a hack. First, I would report it to, if this is Facebook Messenger that you're talking about, I would report to Facebook that your account's been hacked if indeed you're unable to access it or you see that there are messages coming from your account to other people that you didn't send. If it's another case where, say, one of your contacts in your friends list got a message from somebody claiming to be you, but you didn't send that message and it didn't come from your account, then likely what's happening is somebody has cloned your account. They're using your account information. They've created a fake account under your identity, and they are able to access your friend list if you have your account set up as public. And they are reaching out to those friends in your friends list to try to get them to legitimize their fake account. So if they send a friend request to 15 of your friends and they accept, then it'll start looking like they actually are that identity rather than a stolen version of it. So what you may want to do is if anyone has said that they've gotten a message from you that you didn't send, ask them to screenshot the user that it came from. Find that account and report that account to Facebook as fake.
All right. So there we have it. So you just you do it to Facebook then?
Yeah, really, the only way to combat against that is to report to Facebook a fake account or somebody who has stolen your account information and is using it as you.
So you need a screenshot though in order to be able to verify that.
The best thing you can do, yeah, is to take screenshots of everything you find or save links to the sites that you see this information on. But as the kids say these days, keep the receipts.
Okay. Beth, on that note, we're out of time. Thank you so much for calling, for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Larry. It was really good to talk to you.
Beth D'Angelo, Senior IT Specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. It was a good show. Looking ahead to tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show, we cover how to care for a loved one with dementia. We'll look at everything from dealing with language loss to deciding when it's time for a dementia care facility. That's tomorrow at 11 on the show. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.